Our next speaker is the Honourable Dennis Reynolds, who was one of the longest-serving judicial officers in Australia and the longest-serving president of the Children's Court of Western Australia, a position he held from 2004 until his retirement in 2018. He sees the role of the family as critical in addressing justice outcomes for a child or young person. Through his dedication to addressing the high rate of incarceration among Aboriginal young people, Judge Reynolds garnered enormous respect among Aboriginal leaders addressing dysfunction within sections of the Aboriginal community. Strengthening the capacity of communities and involving Aboriginal leaders and community members in developing local solutions for local issues has been a key theme in his advocacy on youth justice issues. Recognising the role that prevention and diversion initiatives play in directing young people away from the formal criminal justice system, Judge Reynolds is a passionate advocate for expanding these initiatives. In particular, he has advocated supporting programs designed around Aboriginal children and young people that respect their cultural needs and values. In 2012, Judge Reynolds was named the winner of the community category of the Western Australian of the Year Awards.
Thank you, Josh. I'm feeling old. It's a bit of a problem putting a set of steps in front of such an old man. Can I thank the organisers for inviting me here today, and thank you everyone for being here. I also wish to pay my respects to the traditional owners of the land on which we meet, the Whadjuk people of the Noongar Nation, and pay my respects to their elders past and present. Thank you also, Robin Collard, for a very kind welcome, and thank you to Your Excellency for being here and for everything that you've done and continue to do for the community. As President of the Children's Court for 14 years, time flies when you're having fun. Can I say that I'd like you to see me not as the person I am, but the position, and understand that you have before you a judge who has had to deal with children, including lots of Aboriginal children, who are very vulnerable and disadvantaged. And these are the views of having been in that position for so long. And I hope the position, as opposed to me personally, brings credibility to what I have to say. Now, a child for legal purposes is a person aged between 10 and 18 years, and the court has a criminal jurisdiction and it also has a civil jurisdiction that deals with child protection matters. So there's an integral connection with poverty and the children that appear before the Children's Court. It can run along a number of pathways, for example, parents uneducated, unemployed, marginalisation, racism, little or no engagement in community, alcohol abuse with or without, drug abuse, domestic violence, direct, indirect, separation of parents, death of family members, death of people close, associated grief, homelessness, unstable accommodation, born with FASD, severe neurodevelopmental impairments, unstable and violent environmental circumstances which impact negatively on brain development, little or no education, and importantly, no sense of identification, cultural connection and self-worth. And so these young children associate with negative peers because they have this sense of belonging. They feel disconnected from community. They see nothing wrong in damaging property or taking someone else's property, or even issuing threats or assaulting and sometimes violently people, because they're so disconnected and they objectify people and see other people's property as property that they'll never get themselves, and so I'll help myself. Now, wrongly, youth offending has been seen as a justice issue. A child doesn't enter the youth justice system until he or she is 10 years of age, which is the minimum age of criminal responsibility. So there's been lots of things happening well before then. There's neuroscience on brain development, and reliable support, research supports the age of criminal responsibility been increased to 14 years. There are political issues there. In the end, it's my view, there was no child sentenced to detention less than 12 in 2020, so why don't we just make it 12 here and now and say that over the next 2 years we'll continue the arguments to whether it goes to 14 and let's get on with it. So by the time a child reaches 10, all of the factors that influence why this child appears before the court, they've all been in place, and they've been in place for a very long time. So it's a matter of deep regret and also shame that in recent years the youth justice system has adopted an overly harsh and punitive approach with undue emphasis on punishment and deterrence. Children, and particularly children with neurodevelopmental impairments, are impulsive. They're not consequential thinkers. In particular, we're failing Aboriginal children and we're wrongly excluding Aboriginal people from entering the space to support their own children. In August of this year, the Supreme Court of this state ruled that rolling lockdowns of children at Bankshear Hill caused by staff shortages, not because the children had engaged in any misbehaviour, were unlawful. Children were being confined to their cells alone for more than 20 hours a day. Despite that ruling, the department has continued to implement rolling lockdowns. Sadly, it and some political leadership have lost their moral compass and respect for the law. We need to take the politics out of this. In 2013, when there was a riot at Bankshear, the then government was saying things from a script, and the now government, then opposition, were saying things from another script. And now, after the damage caused at Bankshear Hill in 2022, all that's happened is that the politicians have changed script from one to the other. In addition to rolling lockdowns, children with FASD and post-traumatic stress disorder have been subjected to solitary confinement in very small cells for up to 23 to 24 hours per day and on numerous days as punishment. Their liberty being taken away from them and being sent to Bankshear Hill is their punishment. They're not sent there to be punished, and certainly not in such an inhumane and at times unlawful way. The behaviour of these children causing extensive damage and assaulting staff at Bankshear is not simply the result of them being difficult, but rather it's the result of how they've been treated. Their behaviour is unsurprisingly the direct result of this overly harsh, inhumane and at times unlawful treatment. In July of this year, 17 vulnerable children, including 12 vulnerable Aboriginal children and one as young as 14, were transferred to Casuarina Adult Maximum Security Prison in shackles. They've been subjected to solitary confinement of up to 23 hours or so a day and given little or no educational programs or time out in fresh air. Yes, this is the 21st and not the 19th century. This punitive approach is actually making it less safe for the staff at Bankshear and Casuarina, and also less safe for the community. Vulnerable children are surprisingly engaging in more incidents of self-harm and attempted suicide. They will inevitably return to the community more aggressive and feeling more disconnected and abandoned than ever. There is an apt African proverb that if the village does not embrace its child, then the child will burn it down to feel its warmth. In the Children's Court protection jurisdiction, again, poverty is particularly relevant as an observation. Far greater empathy and support, including financial, needs to be given to parents who no doubt love their children. The ultimate ironies are that some of the vulnerable children in Bankshear are the subject of protection orders in the care of the state. And secondly, if parents treated their children as the department has in Bankshear Hill, as mentioned, then they could reasonably expect the children being removed from them. How can all of this be remedied as it urgently needs to be, and child poverty be reduced? Ban solitary confinement of children in detention, except for mental health emergencies. Stop this overly punitive and inhumane approach immediately and replace it with a therapeutic, trauma and culturally informed model to support vulnerable children. I think Bella might have mentioned that someone has children are not born bad or good children. We need to stop characterising and treating some children as bad. Now, this change, I think, will pave the way for educational programs, connect the vulnerable children with the community, and in turn enable them to participate in the economy when supported with opportunities and services. So this, as Tony has mentioned, I think it's a moral, a humanitarian issue. But the question is, do we have the money? Well, over the last decade, doing back-of-the-envelope figures, you might be surprised to know that we've spent billions, yes, billions with a B, not an M, in this space. And just in relation to Banshee Hill, over the last decade, we've spent more than half a billion. And here we are still sending vulnerable children to an adult prison. So doing the same things are failing. I think it was Einstein said that if you keep doing the same thing expecting a different result, then that's a definition of sanity. So, yes, we have the money, we need the moral compass and fortitude to do it. Thank you.